Amen. Tonight we're going to look at Proverbs 8 through 12. And we left off, of course, in chapter 7 last week. And as you go into the 8th chapter of Proverbs, you find that wisdom is speaking as a person. Wisdom here is personified, and it's in the feminine. Verse 1. Does not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? So wisdom in Hebrew poetic language is personified, and as I said, it's put in the feminine, crying out to us. So the first thing that wisdom says is that we should listen, crying out for us to come and to listen. She standeth in the top of the high places, verse 2, by the way in the places of the path. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in, at the doors. Unto you, O men, that would be people, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. So, wisdom calling out to us. Jumping down to verse 11. For wisdom is better than rubies. So, we're given the reason as to why we should give heed unto wisdom. It's better than rubies. And all the things that may be desired are not to be compared unto it. It is wisdom that dwells in prudence and findeth knowledge. Verse 13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy and the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate, or the perverse mouth do I hate. Now, I like that verse 11, wisdom is better than rubies. My daughters, I have three daughters, I keep wanting to say four, but I have a house full of women, really. Jared and I are all alone. But they're into rubies and diamonds and gold and all that kind of stuff, you know. Sarah comes in with a little, you know, catalog. Ooh, Daddy, this is the ring I want, you know. Or this is the you know, the stone that I want. And I think, well, just keep wanting, you know. But, you know, we desire those things, rubies, gold, diamonds. Personally, they don't get me that stoked. That means excited, turned on. Doesn't do much for me. But wisdom is much more valuable and more important than any of those things. Wisdom is so important that we get that from God. And it says that to fear the Lord, verse 13, is to hate evil. If you love God, you must hate evil. You can't take a passive stand. Oh, I love the Lord. Oh, I love the Lord. But yet you hate, or you do not hate unrighteousness, or you do not hate ungodliness. You know, it's hard for me to even watch a movie where I see injustice or unrighteousness. It just makes me so angry. I want to just kick the TV screen or something, you know, or, oh, that's not right. Oh, you know, and everybody's saying, shh, be quiet. We're trying to watch the movie, you know. And then, well, that's not fair, you know. That's not right, you know. I don't want to break into the scene and straighten things out. You just hate that unrighteousness. And it speaks of arrogancy and an evil way and the forward perverse mouth. God says, do I hate? Now, jumping down to verse 22, we're not going to be reading all the Proverbs tonight. And actually, I would encourage you to read the Proverbs ahead so that you've read them and then we just touch on them on Sunday night. Verse 22, the Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning or ever the earth was. When there was no depths, I was brought forth. When there was no fountains abiding with water. Now the reason I've hit on these verse is because commonly these verses are applied to Jesus Christ. And there was a time when I even did it, and I think that it was a mistake. I don't believe that this is referring to Jesus Christ. The Jehovah's Witness turned to Psalm 8, saying that this is referencing to Jesus, and they note that he was brought forth. That he was brought forth, and there was a time when he came into existing. He said, I was set up before everlasting from the beginnings of ever, but when there was no depth, I was, verse 24, brought forth. I have had Jehovah's Witnesses turn to Psalm 8 and say, this is referring to Jesus. Jesus came into existence by the Father. That is not what the Bible teaches. If you read the whole proverb in context, it is talking about wisdom. Wisdom is personified. Wisdom is speaking. And you're dealing with a Hebrew poetic book. It's a book that's in the class of the poetic books. And it is not really to be looked at as teaching doctrine. The Proverbs are to be looked at as general truths. There are some things that are read in the Proverbs that don't always ring true. Stuff like the righteous, you know, never suffer, and the righteous, you know, are blessed in the earth. But and that's true, but sometimes it's not true. You can't say that that's a Loctite statement. But I do think it's dangerous to say that this is referring to Jesus. It is not. It's referring to wisdom that is personified. And that in the beginning, God there had his wisdom, that it existed with God, and it was used in the creation of the earth. So that's what it's speaking of there. Beginning in verse 25, it says, before the mountains were settled, before the hills were brought forth, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the deep. So this is why a lot of people like to say this is a reference to Jesus, because here Jesus is there at creation. And they like to take him back before the incarnation or before his birth, what we call Christmas time. Jesus is eternal. He always has been. He always will be. There was never a time when Jesus Christ was not. There was the time when he came into the world and took upon himself the form of flesh, but he existed prior to that, and he exists tonight, and he always will exist. Because he's the eternal God, he's eternally existed. So again here, as I say, be careful that you don't apply this to Jesus, especially when you're talking to a Jehovah's Witness. They will use it against you, actually. Verse 30 says, then I was by him as one brought up with him. I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. Again, they see that as the Father looking at the Son, but it is actually wisdom that is referred to. Rejoicing in the habitable parts of the earth, and my delights were in with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. That is wisdom speaking. Hear instruction and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. First of all, wisdom says, listen. Secondly, verse 17, wisdom says, love. I love them that love me, and see those that seek me early shall find me. And now it says that we should linger, or that we should wait at the gate. Verse 35 says, for whosoever findeth me finds life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongs his own soul. All they that hate me love death. You see all through the Proverbs that to hate wisdom is to love death, or to reap what you've sown, and you hurt yourself, or you only bring your sorrow upon your own self. In chapter 9, we have wisdom and folly contrasted. First part, it's speaking of wisdom, and then the contrast of the folly at the end of the chapter. Wisdom, verse 1, doth build her house. She hath hewn out 7 pillars. She hath killed her beast. She hath mingled her wine. She hath also furnished her table. Wisdom here is shown as having a house, slaughtering the cow, and setting a table. And so wisdom in her house builds this house, has this table, has all the food set up, and then beckons us or calls us to come and feast. So the first call here of wisdom is now come and dine. Verse 5. Come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Forsake the foolish and live, and go in the way of understanding. I like that. Forsake the foolish and live. Proverbs Psalm 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, does not stand in the way of sinners, does not sit in the seat of the scornful. You're hanging out with the wrong people, it's going to mess you up. Wisdom picks its friends. Forsake the foolish and live. Verse 7, he that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. It says, verse 8, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he'll love you. This is repeated throughout the Proverbs, how that a scorner or a perverse person doesn't want to receive rebuke or correction or instruction. And if you try to instruct them, they'll just lash out at you. They'll take it out on you. But a wise person, if you instruct them, if you rebuke them, if you give them counsel, they'll receive it. You know, you can kind of tell where you're at as to how you receive counsel. Someone tries to instruct, don't talk to me, don't tell me what to do. We yell at them and get mad. Or someone comes along and wants to give us in love some instruction, some counsel. And we lash out at them, we get angry, we get upset, we take it out on them. And so we see here in the Proverbs that we should not reprove a scorner. He'll only hate you. But if you rebuke a wise man, he'll love you. In verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. For by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. Again, you will reap what you sow. But if you scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. So you reap what you sow. If you're wise, you'll benefit. If you scorn, you'll reap what you sow. And verse 10, again, is that classic proverb, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear of the Lord is to reverence God. If you live your life before God, wanting to honor Him and to please Him, then your life will be blessed. If you want to please your friends or yourself, or try to impress people and be Mr. or Mrs. Cool or whatever you're into, you're going to mess up your life. The most liberating thing is to come to the place where you realize, hey, all I have to do is please God. All I have to do is what's right before Him. There's always going to be pressure coming from different sources to please people, and in ways you know isn't right. Oh, I'll do that. I know it's wrong, but it'll make my friends happy. They'll think I'm cool. They'll accept me. Oh, I'll do that. I know it's wrong, but you know, my boss really wants me to do that, and he'll promote me. And if you just say, no, I'm going to please God. I'm going to honor God. I'm going to do what's right. Suffer the consequences. Let the chips fall where they will. No matter what, I'll be all right. I may have to lose my job. I may lose my friends. I may lose my influence. I may lose my house, my car. I may lose a lot. But you know what? I'll be right with God. You know what happens so often when I'm counseling somebody? And have to admit, I haven't done it a lot lately. But as I sit down and talk with somebody, and they come in and they tell me all their problems, and their life is all screwed up, and they're all messed up, and what do I want to do? Well, I just basically say, you know, you just need to get right with God. Oh, yeah, I know that, but, you know, if I get right with God, then, you know, my girlfriend will leave me. Oh, you know, I know that, but if I get right with God, you know, I won't be able to get all that money anymore, and, you know, I won't be able to buy those nice cars and drive around those nice cars, and, you know, if I get right with God, gee, you know, I might get kicked out of the house I'm living in. Well, what do you want me to do? I look at him and think, well, why did you come to see me then? They want me to kind of figure out some kind of back way that they can still have the world, their cake, and eat it too, you know? I want the world, but I want to please God, or I want to walk with the Lord. You can't do both. Make up your mind. You got to make a decision here. When Potiphar's wife put eyes on Joseph and said, come lie with me, Joseph could have said, you know, if I go against this woman, I could be in big trouble. I could be in big trouble. I mean, her husband's my boss. And if I don't give her what she wants, you know, boy, I could be in big trouble. You know what Joseph said? He said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You see, Joseph lived before God. God saw him, his motives, his thoughts, and his hearts, and the intents of his heart. God sees your heart. How can I do this great evil and sin against God? That's the issue. Not, oh, well, I kind of like your husband. I can't do this. You know, if you look at men, you can always rationalize some kind of sin. Well, he is kind of a jerk, and he doesn't pay me what he ought to, and okay, let's go for it. But if you look at God and you say, the Lord sees and the Lord knows, and you know, I don't want to break God's heart. I don't want to hurt him. And that's what it means to fear the Lord. You don't want to break God's heart, because when you sin, you break his heart. I want to honor him. I want to please him. You may get thrown in jail. He lost his job. He lost his place to stay. He got thrown in prison. He lost everything. He got thrown in a dungeon. And he spent 3 years in a dungeon, and he didn't do anything wrong. Matter of fact, he obeyed God, honored God, pleased the Lord, did everything what's right, and he ended up in prison. Well, thanks a lot, God. See if I serve you anymore, man. Next time I get out of here and some girl wants to make a move on me, man, I'm going for it. You see, that's what some people would say. That's how some people would think. Rather, Joseph, when he got into prison, said, Lord, you know all about it. I'm just glad I did what's right. I'm glad my heart is right with you. I have a clean conscience. I can go to sleep at night. I know that I'm pleasing you. I know that I've done what's right. Hey, I don't care. I lost my job. I don't have any money. I lost my friends. Big deal. I haven't lost the Lord. I've honored him and pleased him. You see, that's the attitude you need to have. So many people just want to please others and please themselves, and they're not really taking a stand for the Lord. Daniel purposed in his heart he would not defile himself with the king's meat. And that's what we have to do. To live in the world, we have to decide that we're going to purpose in our heart will not be defiled with the world's meat, with the things of the world. We'll do what's right, no matter what the consequences, no matter what we have to pay. And so, the counsel or the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And it says in verse 10 of chapter 9 as well, knowledge of the holy is understanding. The best thing any of you, and myself included, can do is get to know God. Acquaint thyself with God and be at peace. You know, who's the most important person to get to know? God. Who's the most important being in the universe to really get to know? God. I'm sure that every one of us in this room tonight have knowledge in certain areas. Some of us have knowledge in one area that others don't, but every one of us, I think, tonight in some area are experts. I mean, it may be something as silly as just candy. You know the best candy around to eat, or you know the ultimate licorice or something, you know. I met a guy once that was the ultimate in knowledge of watermelons. This guy blew my mind. He knew all about watermelons, every kind, every shape. And it was really cool. He knew how to cut them really great. He showed me how to cut a watermelon so you can just, you know, slice that baby up and get big old chunks without any seed, and you can just scarf on them. What a great discovery. I've learned a lot. I learned how to cut that watermelon the way he showed me. You know, I've benefited from that. You know, we all have our expertise, but the greatest area of knowledge that we all can pursue is in the knowledge of God. Again, I meet Christians and they say, well, I don't know much about God. Well, you ought to. Shame on you. Have you ever studied the attributes of God? and their practical implications? You know what the attributes of God? You ever studied the nature of God and the character of God? Those are wonderful things for you to study and to learn, to understand. A.W. Tozer, in his book, The Knowledge of the Holy, says, an unknown God can neither be trusted nor served. Knowledge of the Holy, so very important. Now, he says in verse 13, now the foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. For she sitteth at the door of her house and on a seat in the high place of the city, to call passengers who go by right on their ways. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith not to him. Stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But in contrast, verse 18, he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. Now, he's speaking of the foolish woman again, and she is crying to follow, to come. She sits in her high places and so forth. And then it goes into verse 17, stolen waters are sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. I believe that that is a reference to illicit sex. That it is a reference to illicit sex. But you have the verse 18 to reckon with. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her gates are in the depths of hell. So you may think it's excitement, you may think it's great, you may think, wow, this is awesome, but it leads to death and it leads to hell. Anybody that gives himself over to that kind of a lifestyle ends up dead or in hell, one or the other. Now, Proverbs chapter 10 is the second main division of the book of Proverbs. It's very important for you to note this as we start now this new section. Proverbs 10 through Proverbs 24 gives us the second main division of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 1 through 9, chapters 1 through 9, constitute actually a preface to the central portion of the book. And now we come to the central portion of the book, about 370-something Proverbs that Solomon gave. And so we get the classic Proverbs of contrast that Solomon gave. The first 9 chapters are just introduction, where wisdom is calling and wisdom is contrasted with folly. But now we get what is considered the classic Proverbs of Solomon, where you have the contrast of the righteous and wicked lives. The righteous person and the wicked person contrasted. Notice verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. There you have both the joys and the sorrows of parenting. And parenting can bring both joys and sorrows. But I think that we need to put parenting on a high priority of our list. I spoke with a woman between services this morning, and she was sorrowing over her two teenagers. Of course, she was divorced many years ago. The kids were raised in a home without a dad, and they had that to contend with and the problems in the home. But now she's lamenting the sad condition of her kids and the way they treat her. And I do think in a lot of cases, we as parents both need to take responsibility and then also realize, too, that after we've done our best, then we just commit our kids to the Lord. If we haven't done our best, ask God to forgive us. Take responsibility. Admit it. Go to your children. Look them face to face and say, you know what? I'm sorry for many of the ways I've neglected you and haven't trained you and haven't instructed you. I realize that I've made big mistakes, and I ask you to forgive me and ask them to pray for you and ask them to, you know, forgive you and just seek to restore that and be honest with them. The best thing you can do as a parent is to be honest with your children when you fail in your parenting. They're so forgiving. They're so understanding. But, you know, we act like, well, I'm the parent. You know, you be quiet. You don't know what you're talking about. It's damaging. Now, a righteous son, a wise son, makes his father glad, but a foolish son is heaviness to his mother. I don't know why, but some have pointed out that the good son brings the father gladness, but when it comes to a foolish son, the mother is mentioned. Some feel that maybe that a woman or the mother feels more deeply the pain of a wayward child. You know, the macho dad thinks, oh, well, you know, he made his bed, lie in it. You know, he's messed up his life, too bad. But a mother always bears her children on her heart, and she just feels that she's sensitive toward them. And so when the kids are acting up or giving them problems, it's the mom, the mother here mentioned in Proverbs 1, that feels that hurt and feels that pain. Not that fathers don't, but it's interesting that mothers are mentioned there. In verse 2 it says, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. If you have money that you've gathered from wickedness, it doesn't profit you a whole lot. You know the teenage kid that goes out and steals and gets all kinds of money? And then he can't do anything with it. He sticks it in his closet and just sits there, because if he buys anything with it, his mom will say, where'd you get the money? And he's busted. I know what I'm talking about. Man, isn't this cool? You know, I steal these things and I steal this money and I stick it in my closet and it sits there, you know, and you think, yeah, big deal. You can't use it. You can't do anything with it. You go, well, I can buy, you know, go to In-N-Out and eat hamburgers. Whatever. But I mean, you gain money by wickedness. It's just, what do you do with it? You know, and even in the world, you start buying all these things, you know, and then all of a sudden the IRS is wondering, where are you getting all your money? People are wondering, you know, where's all your money coming from? And next thing you know, you're in prison. It hasn't profited you any. You get it by wicked means and it doesn't do you any good. It says, though, that the Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish. General truth that I believe is true, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. Jump down to verse 12. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covereth all sins. Hatred in your heart, and you want to fight and argue, you stir up strife, but love seeks to cover those sins. Verse 18 of chapter 10. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The tongue of the just is as choice silver, and the heart of the wicked is little worth. All through the Proverbs we're going to get a lot said about the tongue. And here's some of the first that we begin to get into. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, he that uttereth slander is a fool. Because God in the Bible is called the God of truth, he hates a lying tongue. Proverbs 6, verse 17, and Proverbs 12, verse 22. With lies, people cover their feelings. They don't really, you know, say what they're feeling. They cover their feelings with lies. Proverbs 10:18. They promote hypocrisy by lying. Proverbs 26:23. The Bible says in Proverbs 12:19 that liars do not last. Liars are wiped out, but lies go on for years and they do great damage. In James it says, behold how great a fire little tongue can kindle. Your tongue is like a little member in your body, but it can do great damage. It is amazing how damaging slander can be, how damaging lies can be. Sometimes they can never be corrected. They can never be retrieved. It's like the guy that told a bunch of lies about people in the town, and he realized it was wrong, and he went to the pastor and he said, you know, I realize it's wrong. I told these lies, and now what do I do? How do I straighten things out? He He says, well, you take this bag of feathers and you go around to every house of the person you lied to and you lay a feather on their front porch. And when you've finished your rounds and you get to the last person, then you go back to the first person you laid the feather on their front door and you pick up the feather and you retrieve it, put it back in your bag. The guy says, well, man, that's crazy. There's no way. By the time I get back around to the first person, the feather's blown away. It's gone. The pastor said, that's right. And the lies that you've spoken cannot be retrieved. And the damage they've done cannot be corrected. Once that's spoken, once that's given out, you can never retrieve them. You can never accept them back. You can never straighten them out. I know people's character has been damaged by slander. And it just does not die. It goes on and on and on and on. In a lot of cases, it'd be better to be shot with a gun, hit with a baseball bat, than to be slandered. It's a long-range weapon, the tongue is. You know, you have to be a certain distance to shoot somebody with a bullet, with a gun. But somebody on the other side of the world, thousands of miles away, I could utter a slanderous word about them and destroy them by a few words spoken. It's a very powerful, powerful thing, the tongue. Long-range weapon. So we need to be careful about what we say. The Bible says, wealth gained by lying, Proverbs 21:6. I'm just relating this to you. Compilation of verses about lying is fleeting. Wealth gained by lying is fleeting. You don't need to turn there. I'm just relating this to you. The Bible says in Proverbs 19, all liars shall one day perish. As a matter of fact, the Bible says liars will have their part in the lake of fire. Whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. And if God hates lies, Proverbs 13:5, so should we. He's a God of truth, a God of righteousness, and we need to speak the truth in love, Ephesians 4 says. We need to be truthing it, speaking the truth in love. Now, Proverbs 10, verse 25, jumping down to verse 25. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more. But the righteous is an everlasting foundation. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send them. That's great. Vinegar on your teeth. Ooh, that hurts. Smoke in your eyes. Oh, that's a bummer. Irritant. So is the sluggard. If you're one who is sending, you're paying the guy to do a job and he's a sluggard, it's like smoke in your eyes. It says, the fear, verse 27, of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. That's pretty clear. Verse 30, the righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. Jesus said, the meek shall inhabit the earth. Chapter 11, verse 1, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. You say, what does that mean? It means that in your business dealings, you better be fair. If you sell somebody a pound of corn, there better be a pound of corn in that bag. You tell them, this is a pound of corn, give me $1.30. There better be a pound of corn. In those days, they weighed out everything. They bought and purchased grains and so forth. And so they had their balances and their weights. And they would use that for their measurements, for buying stuff. They'd set their coins on it, weigh the coins. And so some guy would have his trick balances or his, you know, under the table. He'd pull out his own little balance, hook it up, you know, oh boy, there it is. And he's ripping people off. It's not right. It's not fair. Shortchanging people when you go to give them their money at the store and, you know, hoping they won't notice that and then taking it back to yourself. I remember when I was a little kid going to the Orange Show. I haven't been there since I was a little kid. Don't want to go there. But you'd go there and you'd ride on all those funky little rides that they had, you know, and you're in the little booth and you buy your ticket and they'd give you your change, but they'd slide on the counter your change and they'd stop it just in the right. They'd put some of it out where you could see it, but they'd put some of the change right where from your eye, you couldn't see the change behind the little, you know, place where you'd reach in there in the little booth, and you reach in, take. Gotta look down and reach in there and scoop it all out to get it all out. They knew that you'd just reach down and walk off, and then they'd pull 30 cents back to themselves, you know, rip you off, and stuff like that going on, ripping people off intentionally, shortchanging people. It's an abomination to God. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the transgressors shall destroy them. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but the transgressor shall be taken in their own naughtiness. When a wicked man, verse 7, dieth, his expectation shall perish, and the hope of the unjust man perisheth. I think of the rich fool who left it all behind. Jesus said, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, then whose shall those things be?" The wicked man dieth, and his expectation perishes. You know, if you don't know God especially, and you're rich, it's a painful thing to die. You know those crazy tabloids that you see going through the check stand at the supermarkets? One of them's got the picture of Howard Hughes on it, come back from the dead. Richest man in the world, it says, come back from the dead. I don't believe it, but if you look at the picture of the guy, I wouldn't want to come back looking like that. He is ugly. Give me all the money in the world, man. I'd stay in the grave if I look like that. You know, what good does it do? Leave it all behind. Paul said, "For me to live is Christ and to die is gain." If you don't know Christ, for me to live is my money. To die is to leave it all behind. For me to live is to be popular. To die is to be forgotten. To me to live is have power. To die is to lose it all. If you live Christ, to die is to gain. It goes with you. The righteous, verse 8, is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. Or a better translation is, the righteous is delivered out of trouble, and it comes upon the wicked. The trouble comes upon the wicked instead. We got that today in Acts chapter 12 this morning in our study. Peter's delivered. And what happens? The same angel that smote Peter, woke him up, delivered him, smote Herod with worms, and he died. So the righteous are delivered, but the wicked are judged. Verse 11, by the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. Verse 13, a talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of faithful spirit concealeth the matter. So you're not to go around tattletaling and revealing secrets. Verse 14, where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is wisdom. Of course, in the context, it's referring to a nation that has their counsel and follows that and does not fall, but the wisdom that is in the multitude of counselors. This is, again, illustrated by Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when he took over the throne after his father Solomon had reigned. And he got all his counselors together, and the older, wiser counselors told him to lighten up on the taxes. And then the younger guy said, "No, you're just taking over and you're just new in office, so it's time to increase the taxes." And so he took the advice of the younger guys and didn't take the advice of the older fellows, and he increased the taxes and the kingdom split. It was the divided kingdom. So he really ate it big time because he didn't listen to the wise counsel. I do believe that it is good, and you're smart, to realize your limitations. To realize that you don't have all the knowledge that you need, and to seek out knowledge in areas where you are lacking. Especially godly counsel, godly wisdom. Now, you can go too far with that and never really make your own decisions and seek the Lord and go to the Word. But I do think that it's wise to get counsel and to get wisdom. Oh, that young people would more go to the older folks and ask for counsel. Wouldn't it be neat if more teenagers just came into their dad and mom and said, Mom and Dad, I want your input. I want your counsel on this relationship or this dating relationship. Or I really need your wisdom on what to do here, what to do there. You know, what do you think? And to get wisdom and insight from your parents, you know, rather than just being a rebellious teenager that says, my dad's a dodo and he doesn't know what he's talking about and, you know, he's the geek of the week or whatever. As I look back, I wish I would have listened to more of what my dad had to say. I wish I would have gotten more of his counsel. I would have gleaned from more of his wisdom. I thank the Lord for what he did give me and that which stayed with me and helped me. But you know, the minute a kid turns 13, he thinks he's omniscient. You know, he just, all of a sudden, wisdom beyond the years of his parents. And a lot of times they just don't take that counsel. They don't take that wisdom. So, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Jump down to verse 20. They that are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. Now here's a classic. Don't miss it. Verse 20. Are you ready for this one? You guys ready? Yeah, you're supposed to say yeah. Verse 22. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. I love that. This is a classic Proverbs of parallelism, emblematic parallelism it's called, where it uses a picture, or a picture, and the picture that the proverb writer has here is a jewel, a nose ring with a jewel in it, and a pig's nose. Gross. What it means is, it doesn't do anything for the pig. You know, you have a filthy, ugly-looking pig, and you stick a jewel in its nose, or a nose ring in it, and you go, oh, isn't it beautiful now? No, it's still a gross-looking pig with a nose ring, with a jewel in its nose. Doesn't do anything for it. Doesn't help it. It doesn't compliment it. And then it relates it to a woman. That's great. A woman that is beautiful. Not a pig, but a good-looking woman. But a woman that is fair but lacks discretion. Discretion is that she lacks moral perception. In other words, she may be really glamorous, but morally she's an absolute ignoramus. She's a dodo. And this is kind of classifies about 90% of the Hollywood dames. You know, all these real so-called glamour girls, you know. You see the magazines, 10 of the hottest, best-looking people in Hollywood, you know. How stupid. And they may be physically attractive, but they have no moral concept at all. They're lacking in moral perception. Totally living immoral lives. And it just kind of like, turn off. Just spoils it. Beautiful diamond, beautiful ruby, beautiful jewel, and you stick it in a pig's nose. Just, you ruin it. It's just out of place. It doesn't really go there. And so, she's a beautiful woman, but she lacks moral discernment. And so it's just, you know, it doesn't mean anything. The emphasis is that a woman's true beauty is a moral beauty, a spiritual beauty, an inner purity. Peter talks about this in his epistle where he says that the women's beauty ought not to be in the outward emphasis of the weaving of the hair and the wearing of gold and jewelry and fancy apparel. But, use the word but, contrast, let it be the hidden person of the heart, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which in the sight of God is of great price. For after this manner, the holy women of old adored themselves, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. So it's that inner beauty. The outer beauty, no matter how hard you work on it, is going to fade. Sooner or later, Elizabeth Taylor is going to get some wrinkles. Sooner, I see her pictures on a magazine and go, how long can this woman keep looking like this, you know? She must have makeup 6 inches thick on her face. You know, don't smile, Elizabeth. We're taking your picture, it'll crack, you know? I mean, unbelievable. You know, if I live long enough, we'll see the day. They're going to have to do a lot of work to make her look good sooner or later. And Jack O'Lane, he's getting old. He's getting wrinkles. Can't last forever. You know, tummy tucks and tummy pulls and paint it up and tuck it up and do whatever you want. You're going to get old. I know it's sometimes hard to accept, you know. But there's not much you can do about it. So let it be the inner beauty. Verse 22 is one for especially the ladies that ought to highlight or underline. Verse 24, there is that scattereth yet increaseth. There is that withholdeth more than what is right, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul, verse 25, shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him. Blessing shall be upon the head of him that sells it. Verse 24 to 26 are talking about being liberal in our giving. The principle that Jesus gave in the New Testament, where it says, give and it shall be given unto you. In good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, shall men give unto your bosom. And so it is true as a general principle that if you are giving, you will be a person who will be receiving, not just in money, but in other areas. You know, you give love, you'll receive love. You show kindness, you'll receive kindness. You give out, and you'll receive, you know. Person that says, oh, you know, I don't know why everyone is so mean. Heard the story about these people that were traveling from one city to another, and they were out in the country, and they came on to a farmer. And he was working in his field, and they were headed into the town the farmer lived in, and he stopped and pulled over and said to the farmer, what kind of people live in this town? And the guy said, well, I don't really know. You know, I live out here on the farm. I don't go into town that much. And he go, why do you ask? And he said, well, you know, we just left that town, and we're wanting to move in this new town. I wonder what kind of people they are. And he goes, well, tell me, what kind of people lived in the town you just left? Oh, they were mean. Oh, they were rude. They never said hi to us. They were just really mean and rude and just horrible people. And the wise old farmer said, I'm sure that when you go to this new town, that's the very same kind of people you're going to find in this town. Words of wisdom. Oh, no one ever says hi to me. Oh, no one likes me. Oh, no one's my friend. No one ever gives me anything. What you sow, you reap. Give and it shall be given unto you. He that hath friends must show himself friendly. And so the proverb here tells us that if we scatter, we will increase. If we withhold, we will tend to poverty. Verse 24. But the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that waters shall himself also be watered. You love, you give, you serve, and I guarantee you people will love you and give to you and serve you. Now that should not be your motive. But you know anybody that gives of themselves and serves others and loves people, genuinely loves them, that isn't not himself loved and appreciated, then I'd like to meet that person. It's not so. Usually the person that has no friends is often the person
who has not found someone to be a friend to. I know there might be some that try to paint a scenario that would object to that, but I think there are a lot of selfish people that are suffering as the consequence of their own selfishness. They have not given of themselves, and therefore no one is giving to them. He that trusts in his riches, verse 28, shall fall. But the righteous shall flourish as a branch. The fruit, verse 30, of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Now there's probably a contrast between verse 29 and 30. He that troubles his own house shall inherit the wind. In other words, if you bring trouble on your family, you probably will be written out of the inheritance. You aren't going to get anything. But if your life is lived in righteousness, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. It brings blessing to others. And he that winneth souls, the idea is, attracts others to the Lord or to wisdom, he is wise. I don't think it's referring to the evangelism as we would refer to it in the New Testament sense of going out and witnessing, but it's talking about a righteous life bearing fruit and just blessing other people. One of the richest things you can do for your wife or for your husband, for your children, for your friends, is live a righteous life. You don't have to be famous. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to do all these fantastic things. Just live a righteous life before God, and your life will bear fruit, and you'll bring blessing to others around you. That's what it's saying there in verse 30. The fruit of righteousness is a tree of life that others can benefit from. Now in chapter 12, again, I'm just going to hit a few verses real quickly. Whosoever loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hates reproof is brutish. Verse 4, a virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is rottenness to his bones. Ashamed not just in the moral sense, but in all ways. Wasting money, backbiting, you know, a guy that's got a wife that's a gossip. What a reproach. What a thorn in the flesh. And I do know some men that I consider to be real godly men, and I feel sorry for them because of their wives. I know that it works the other way. I know a lot of women I feel sorry for. Poor girl, let's pray for her. She's married to a brutish husband. But, you know, if you're walking with the Lord and serving Him, then you're blessing. Your life is a fruitful bough, and you're blessing your family, you're blessing your wife, you're blessing your husband. If a woman is virtuous, then she's a crown to her husband. I think of Sarah, what a blessing she was to Abraham. But he... was she that maketh the shame's rottenness, I think, in the contrast of Job's wife. Why don't you curse God and die? Thank you, dear. I'm sure glad you're my wife. I needed those words of encouragement. So, what a bummer. In verse 9, is despised and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself, but has nothing, lacks bread. Now I picked that proverb out. It's kind of neat because it's a first proverb that uses the word better instead of but. And so it's a comparison rather than a contrast. And you find 19 of them through the Proverbs. 19 of these better proverbs in contrast to the but proverbs. Now, what it's saying there in verse 9 is he that is despised, which has the idea of is unknown. Is an unknown, nobody knows him, he's not very popular, nobody knows who he is, but he does have a servant. In other words, he can take care of himself, he does have some substance, is better than the guy that brags and says, I'm rich, I have money, I have servants, I'm really somebody, but in reality, has nothing. And so it's better to be a nobody and have something than to brag to be a somebody and have nothing. You got that? That's really what it's saying. Who cares if I'm popular? I have a servant. And then the other guy, oh yeah, I have servants. I have them all over the place. And you know, you don't have anything. Which is better? It's better to have than to be braggadocious. And in verse 11 it says, he that tills his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth vain persons is void of understanding. Again, get busy, work, till your land, follow with the right crowd of people, and you'll be blessed. If you follow the wrong people, you're void of understanding. Verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that heareth and knoweth unto counsel is wise, or hearkeneth, unto counsel is wise. So the fool thinks that his way is right. But the person that recognizes, again, their limitations, they're open to counsel, he is wise. Verse 18, there is that speaketh like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. The lip of truth shall be established forever, but lying tongue is but for a moment. Here again you have the sins of the tongue. The words that come out of our mouth, verse 18, that pierce like a sword. But in contrast, the words of the wise, they bring health. Again, the power of words to destroy somebody, to hurt and to wound, that somebody can carry that with them. The lips of truth shall be established forever, but lying tongue is but for a moment. The word moment in the Hebrew has the idea of a blinking of an eye. Lying tongue is but just for a moment. Verse 21, there shall no evil happen to the just, but the wicked shall be filled with mischief. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Verse 24, the hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. Again, in a general sense, those that are diligent and those that are not sluggards, they shall be the ones in control of not only their situation, but also leaders in the society. Heaviness, verse 25, in the heart of a man maketh it stoop, but a good word makes it glad. Heaviness in the heart of a man makes it stoop, but a good word makes it glad. You can say something to somebody cutting or downgrading, and you can really just bring them down. You can really discourage them. On the other hand, a kind word, an encouraging word can lift them up and bless them. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of the diligent man is precious. What does that mean? It means the guy that goes out and works hard for what he gets appreciates what he gets. The slothful guy that just kind of, oh, well, you know, and it uses the picture of a hunter, oh, you know, there's a deer, shoots it, just leaves it laying there, doesn't cook it, doesn't eat it. You know, no, but he doesn't appreciate it. Doesn't really, you know, he doesn't work hard for it, and so he doesn't appreciate it. I do think that we do our children damage as parents when we do not allow our children to learn work ethic and to learn to be responsible and to learn to earn their own way. We pick up after them. We cover their bases. We do everything for them, and we're destroying them, absolutely destroying them. We need to be slowly, training them to become independent. How many adult children are living at home with mom and dad because they were never trained to be independent? Now the parents are paying the price for their slothfulness, is what it is. Rather than training children of a young age to become independent, their arrows to be taken out of the quiver, put in the bow, and shot. Some people think, yeah, as far away as you can get them. No. But they're not to stick around. They're to leave and cleave. And mom and dad stay home. But in verse 27, it's just saying that, you know,
Slothful man doesn't care for what he gets. The diligent man, it's precious to him. In the way of righteousness is life, and in the pathway thereof there is no death. Righteousness brings blessing. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for your word tonight. And I know we've read over a whole bunch and moved fast, but I thank you for the wisdom that's in the Proverbs. Oh, that we would just hearken unto wisdom, that we would just fear the Lord, that we would do what's right and honor Him, seek to please Him and serve Him and follow Him. Oh Lord, I pray that you'll help us not to be slothful, not to be sluggards, not to love folly and foolishness, but to love wisdom, to listen, to love wisdom, to linger at her gates, to learn, to fear the Lord. The knowledge of the holy is the beginning of wisdom, and to fear the Lord. Help us, Lord, to have wisdom. Not just knowledge, but wisdom. Give us moral discernment. Give us wisdom into how to live life and deal with people. Conduct ourselves in a way that honors you and glorifies you. That we might be blessed, that our lives might bear fruit, and that you might be glorified. Help us, Lord, to heed to these instructions. We ask it, Lord, in Jesus' precious name. Amen.